And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
Welcome, everyone. It is time for apologetics. You have entered into Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo. I'm Gary Matuta, and welcome aboard, everybody. It's great to be here to discuss explaining, defending the faith. There's probably no better person out there than a person named Catholic Brian, at least if you are familiar with surfing YouTube and looking at Catholic speakers. They're very popular nowadays. You're familiar with Brian Mercer. Well, Brian Mercer is going to come into the dojo today, and we're going to talk apologetics and specifically a book that he has out called Why Do You Believe in God? He's new to the dojo, so this is going to be a lot of fun. I haven't had a chance to meet him personally, and although I am familiar with his work on social media and so on, so we're going to ask that question, why do you believe in God? And Brian's going to kind of unpack that for us today. And also, as always, we're going to jump into our critical thinking skills and meet the early church fathers before Brian comes on the show. By the way, the finding the fallacy for today is the incomplete comparison. And the Meet the Early Church Father is a biggie, is St. Hilary of Poitiers. So got lots of good stuff in store for us today, talking about apologetics, critical thinking, church fathers. What else can you ask for? And as always, you are part of the program. So especially when Brian comes on the show after the break and you have a question or comment, please give us a call at 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. Love to hear from you. Or you can always email us your questions at questions@handsonapologetics.com. And that goes directly to the dojo mailbox, which I open every day and read. And I also reply, by the way. Even though I might not use it on the show, or maybe not immediately on the show, I do reply to all those. And ladies and gentlemen, that's the easiest way to get a hold of me. So there are other ways of contacting me, but that one is a direct line right to my email. So make use of it. We actually have some really good emails in line waiting for us to unpack on one of our programs. Perhaps maybe Friday we'll dive into some of the mail. Good stuff. Lots of really good stuff. Some people out there experimenting, and that's what this show is all about. Hands-on apologetics, how to learn to explain the faith with confidence and clarity and charity. And that involves learning how to do it, not just what to do, but how to do it. Part of that, I should give my shout outs to social media, those watching live stream on Facebook and YouTube. Hello, everybody. Hi, everybody. Oh, yes. Beautiful spring-like emojis today. It's great to see the gang there. In fact, thanks for all the emojis. I appreciate it. That does make my day, folks, because I know for a fact that there are at least 7 to 8 people listening at this moment. And actually seeing emojis jump on the screen when I give my shout-out confirms that belief. And also thank you, those listening on radio. We thank you for joining us. And also, as I know, there's quite a few people who listen to this program via podcast. So hello to you. And for those who maybe you missed the show or you might not be able to hear the entire show, Virgin Most Powerful has done you a great service by having its website, which is www.virginmostpowerfulradio.com. And go there and click on our shows and scroll down to Hands-On Apologetics. And there you'll find all the programs that we do, actually from the very beginning to today. And we've had amazing amount of awesome guests on the show. And that's becoming a very big database that you can dig into and listen to whether you're mowing the lawn or doing the garden. Or today, I don't know, it's rainy and cold over here in Southeast Michigan. Maybe just trying to keep warm, you can put on the podcast and get up to date on the latest and greatest in apologetics. Why don't we jump to our exercises? Finding the fallacy. Every episode we look at an informal fallacy. Today's informal fallacy is the incomplete comparison. Now, this is a kissing cousin to a propaganda technique known as misuse of relative terms. It's basically the same thing, in fact. What this fallacy is, the incomplete comparison, is a misleading argument that's very popular, by the way, in advertising. In fact, I think you probably see it almost exclusively in advertising, although you do get it a lot on social media and just dialogues, discussions. So what is it? It's basically when a person uses a relative or comparison without telling you what it's comparing it to. Okay. For example, if an advertisement says that product X is better, you know, there's that immediate positive feedback. Like, we always want to get something that's better, right? You wouldn't want to get something that's worse. But the problem is they never specify what it's better than, right? What is it better than? And that affects the whole thing because the relative words are comparative in terms of the thing that's being compared to. So, for example, if you say it is more loving to do X, more loving than what? You know, torturing your hamster? You know, it may say a lot. It may say nothing at all. So by not disclosing what it's being compared to, in a sense, it's not a very illicit argument. So this is an incomplete assertion. And so it really can't be refuted because you don't know what it's basically speaking about or what it's being compared to. And like I said, this is a kissing cousin to a propaganda technique about misuse of relative terms. And you'll see stuff like, 50% better, less filling, more healthy, things like that. But it's like less filling than what? More healthy than what? And I think you could also use that in politics. A while ago, there was this thing about change. You know, I'm for change. Well, change to what? Change from what? You know, it's relative. Okay, so anyway, that is our finding of the fallacy for today, the incomplete comparison. All right, so beware, folks. And remember that here on Hands-On Apologetics, our program is 75% better. Keep that in mind. Very important. All right, let's go to the Meet the Early Church Father for today. And as I said, the Early Church Father for today is a biggie. He is St. Hilary of Poitiers, who lived roughly around AD 315, died somewhere around 367, 368. St. Hilary is known as the Athanasius of the West. And last week, we kind of really focused on Athanasius. So it's kind of cool that we kind of see his counterpart. He's a staunch defender of the Nicene Creed. And, of course, the Nicene Creed was the creed that met against Arianism. Arianism wished to understand the Son as being, in a sense, like the Father, but not consubstantial with the Father. In other words, he's God-like, but he's not God. So in the Creed, we say that the Son is consubstantial with the Father, meaning of one substance, of the same substance. So that met against the Arians, and he was a staunch defender of that council. He was born of wealthy pagan parents in Poitiers. He received an excellent early education in philosophy and rhetoric. And after making a study of the Old and New Testament scriptures, he was converted to the faith. Now, what's interesting is St. Hilary, although he was married, the clergy and laity of his native city elected him bishop in 350 AD. And that's when he started making trouble for orthodoxy, or I guess heterodoxy, where he started to proclaim the true faith. In 356 AD, Hilary ended up being exiled by Constantius, the emperor, to Phrygia in Asia Minor. because he had been organizing resistance against the lawful metropolitan of Gaul, who was Saturninus of Arles. And the problem with Saturninus is that he was an Arian, or at least he had Arian tendencies. So Hilary was kind of like after this heretical metropolitan, and as a result, the emperor exiled him to Phrygia. And but while in Phrygia, he made so much trouble for the Arians in Asia Minor, you know, refuting the Arians, that eventually they sent him packing back to Gaul, to France. So this was in 359 AD. He ends up coming back, you know, return to sender. This guy is too much trouble for us. So he ends up back in Gaul, and he promptly obtains the excommunication of Saturninus. So so ultimately, you know, he causes trouble for these heterodox people. He gets exiled, causes trouble there, ends up back where he was, and ends up getting the heterodox metropolitan excommunicated. That Arianism in the West quickly began to crumble after the death of Constantius in 361 AD. And that's largely through the longstanding and strenuous efforts of Hilary, who died about 367 or 368. And he was also, by the way, proclaimed a doctor of the church by Pius IX in 1851. So that's our early church father for today, St. Hilary. Coming up after the break, where we can talk with Brian Mercer about why do you believe in God. Stay tuned, everybody.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. Well, you know, the show is Hands-On Apologetics, and that means that we're concerned about sharing and defending the faith, and sometimes, especially with young adults, they have lots of questions, and it's important for us to be able to give, you know, nice, short, but good answers in defense of the faith and answer their questions. Well, coming up next, we have Brian Mercer, who's a professional Catholic speaker, a retreat leader, author, Catholic apologist. He's spoken at countless teens and adults over 20 years through confirmation retreats, parish missions, keynote talks, Catholic school retreats, seminars. He's also been on television, radio, also on EWTN in the United States and Ireland. And he's also becoming, I think, a kind of force in social media, you know, especially on YouTube and other things. So, Brian Mercer, welcome to Hands-On Apologetics.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for coming on the show, because I was flipping through your book. And by the way, folks, I should get the title to the book. I'm sorry. It's Why Do You Believe in God? Catholic Conversations with Skeptics and Non-Believers. Actually, you know, usually when we have somebody new to the show, I ask them to kind of give a thumbnail sketch of, you know, their journey of faith. So were you a cradle Catholic or are you a convert?
I'm actually a cradle Catholic that had a very big reversion experience in college.
Okay.
Would you like more information? Because, I mean, if you want the very short ideal of it, I used to dress in all black in high school. I was very angry. I carried weapons. I wanted to hurt people. And my mom was very concerned about me. And so, not knowing what to do with me other than call the cops, she decided to send me out to Franciscan University of Steubenville, where I went, and I had a really powerful, a St. Paul style conversion where he turned my life upside down and backwards. And I mean, he literally transformed me so completely that all I wanted to do was share Jesus with as many people as I could, as many people as he would let me. And that's what I've done for the last 20 years. And I hope he'll let me do that for the next 20 years.
Wow. Wow. So how did that begin? Were you asking questions or did someone come up to you? Did you read a book?
Good question. That's actually part of the reason I wrote my book, is because when I was in religious education and just even in my house, I used to ask a lot of deep questions. How do we know that God exists? And you know, just believing in God's a mystery, that doesn't cut it for me. I want to know how we can know God exists. How do we know the Bible's true? How do we know it hasn't been watered down? And people would just say, it's a mystery. You just have to believe. And for me, that doesn't cut it. So I spent the next 15 years researching deeply and studying these things, book after book, CD after CD, taking theology courses, and anything I could get my hands on. Simultaneously, my faith was attacked by Jehovah's Witnesses and Protestants on the street corner, and so I was going back every week and looking up all their answers, and it literally was like a full-time job for me, and I just couldn't get enough of it. And now I like to say that I help other people to understand their faith so they don't have to be as awkward as I was when, you know, having approached Protestants and Jehovah's Witnesses, and so they can get the answers to their questions. Because today, I feel people are leaving the church because they're asking good questions and they have really good objections, but they're not getting them answered. And that's one of the biggest reasons that I wrote my book.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, it's funny. Your journey kind of parallels mine in lots of ways. We're kind of oddballs in the apologetics world. We're cradle Catholics.
Yes.
And it's funny how, you know, once your faith is attacked, like if you actually start looking for answers, it's hard not to fall in love with the faith, because not only there are answers, but there's great answers.
Absolutely. And I feel that too many people, at the first sign of doubt or people attacking their religion, they think it's all wrong and they leave. They leave too quickly without first researching their own faith just to make sure. I made sure to research my own faith just because if it's wrong, okay, that's fine. But I want to know that. And if it's right, I also want to know that. I just want to go wherever the truth leads me. And so I researched my own faith first, and I actually not only fell in love with it, but fell in love with Christ a lot deeper too. And I think other people would if they took that path.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly with me. I mean, I had my young adulthood was during the 80s, and so many friends of mine that went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school, as soon as they encountered any kind of opposition, they just went ahead with it and figured, okay, well, that, if that's true, then I shouldn't be Catholic, and they left. And I wasn't going to be one of them. You know, I want to at least hear both sides of the issue before I'd make up my mind. So good for you. That's awesome.
And if you don't mind me saying so, I think a lot of people aren't always raised with a faith, too. And so it seems silly if you go to a science class and they're talking about evolution. And, I mean, the Bible, how many thousands of years old is that? And how many times has that been changed and watered down? And it's all got to be believed by faith anyways. But if you have science, science is fact, and we can see the facts. So if you're going to have a book that's 3,000, 5,000 years old based on faith or actual facts, most people today are going to go by the facts. And that's the way it's presented many times, which is why it's easy for people to leave without actually researching it, because today religion's presented as, well, God's just a fairy in the sky. He's imaginary. And, you know, I'd rather have the facts of science.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because if, you know, when you're learning about the faith, especially as a young person, if they're not giving you solid information, because maybe they don't really know, or, you know, or they're busy or something, then that allows your imagination to fill in the blanks, and it becomes almost like, well, you know, it's why is the Bible true? Well, yeah, because these are important stories, and, you know, it touches on our faith. But you can't really give any good, solid, fact-based arguments.
Exactly. And in fact, I give retreats all around, and confirmation kids, Catholic school kids, and I always start out my retreats saying, how many people believe in God, how many people don't, and how many people are somewhere in the middle? And it drastically varies depending on the town and the background of the people and that sort of thing. But sometimes I have up to 70% of the people on a confirmation retreat that say they either aren't sure if God exists or don't believe in God at all. Like, it's frightening sometimes. And so I always start off my retreat saying, okay, guys, how many people believe in God? And then some raise their hands, and I say, okay, prove it. How do you know that God exists? What evidence do you have that God exists? And people will say, there is no evidence. I'm like, then why do you believe it? They're like, faith. I'm like, what's faith? And they're like, just believing. And I'm like, really, do you believe in the Easter Bunny or the Tooth Fairy? Because there's no evidence for those either. And so I really try to get them to critically think about why they believe what they believe. Now, some people will say, well, the Bible. And I say, well, how do you know the Bible wasn't made up? How do you know it wasn't watered down? And I literally challenge their faith so that they have a hunger to know whether it's true or not. And I find that works really well.
Yeah, yeah, very good. Man, boy, I think we live in a parallel universe. I do some similar on my when I talk to youth. I go up there and I say, hi, my name's Gary. I'm an atheist, and here's why God doesn't exist. I just pound them with it, you know. And the cool thing is, Brian, and I'm interested to hear what you're once you're done with the presentation, like, they're coming out of their seats. They and usually the people that don't talk are the ones that want to really engage.
Absolutely. I find a lot of the kids are like, I've never heard that before. That makes a lot of sense. It makes a ton of sense, actually. And I even I used to substitute in public schools and talk to teens about this all the time. And they even said that, you know what, this makes a lot of sense. If people had told me this before, I wouldn't have stopped going to church. If people had told me this before, I wouldn't have stopped praying. And so I really feel that this is the answer to the crisis in our church, is that we need apologetics, we need evangelization, we got to stop tiptoeing around the issues, you know, stop trying to water it down, and just give it to them hard, because that's the way they love it. They love truth. And when you give it to them, you're right, they're on the edge of their seats and they want more.
Yeah, yeah, very good. And what I love about your book, and by the way, folks, the name of the book is Why Do You Believe in God, is that you really boil it down to some very simple dialogues. It's not complex. It's not, you know, super dense and pedantic, but it's very simple, yet very well thought out.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And it's a good compliment, because I intentionally tried to make it that way. I feel a lot of people try to speak too theologically to the common person, you know, who doesn't understand theology. So I want to take Thomas Aquinas. I want to take St. Augustine. I want to take these people and break it down so that people can understand it. Anyone, at any level of background. So there's certain conversations that are very, you know, shallow, but people understand it. And then there's other ones that are much deeper. But these are actual real conversations that I've had with atheists, and I feel like the information that I presented to them actually really made sense to them. And I've had atheists come back to me and be like, Brian, you know, because of our conversations, you know, I believe in God now, and I want you to know that I'm praying again, and it's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, well, you know, kudos to you, because that's, you know, I do some writing myself, and writing something simply is so hard, folks. It, you would think that, you know, putting things simply would be easy. It would be the more like dense stuff. But if you want to use jargon, that's easy to do. But to boil it down to just an ordinary conversation that's accessible, like Brian does in his book, that's hard. So you have my admiration for doing this.
Well, thank you. I'm also working on a volume 2 for conversations that I've had with Protestants, Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, Muslims, and just teaching people how to defend their faith from any type of person that they encounter, whether it's an atheist or agnostic or just someone of a different religion or someone who's left the church. These people have good questions, and we need to be able to explain our faith and understand it more ourselves, wouldn't you
awesome.
Say?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what was your idea of why do it in a dialogue format? Why not just do a straight out, you know, this is how you defend the faith?
That's a good question. I actually used to have these dialogues sometimes daily, and I used to post them on Facebook, you know, what this person said and how I responded, what they said, how I responded, just so not only people could learn their own Catholic faith, but, you know, maybe even be inspired to defend it, and I could show them practically how to do that. And then at some point, a few people started telling me, hey, these are great conversations. We absolutely love them, and we look for the next ones. Have you ever thought about putting them in a book? And so that was kind of the mindset that I had, that people had put in my head, and well, now it's that.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful, and yeah, I found it. You know, and it's such a quick read too. It's not something that you know, I think for younger people, you need something that's quick. You know, their attention span's not like, you know, if with me, like older guy, where I could sit down and spend a couple of hours reading. It's like if you don't grab their attention right away and get to the point, you lose them.
Exactly. And I try to give away free books at all my retreats to different, you know, I give away two or three to different people. And I've had people write back to me, even seventh graders who have read my book in a night. An eighth grader recently from Texas read my book in a night, and she said she's a Baptist, her family's in RCIA, and I actually answered not only all her questions about God, but about the Catholic faith as well, and she said she's incredibly excited to become Catholic now.
Wow, that's exciting. We're talking with Brian Mercer on his book, Why Do You Believe in God? Stay tuned, everybody.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, catholicrc.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. And welcome to Apologetics Dojo. We are talking with Master Apologist Brian Mercier on why do you believe in God? Catholic conversation with atheists and skeptics. And Brian, how about I throw out a couple of the questions you raise in the book, and maybe you could take a swing at them. Brian, are you there? Oh, I think we lost Brian. What do you think, Richard? Okay, well, we lost the guest. We'll get him back on the line in a second. And basically, we're talking about his book, Why Do You Believe in God? Catholic Conversations with Skeptics and Nonbelievers. Brian's done a great job kind of boiling down in a very simple format, roughly about 16 chapters. And each chapter is only a couple of pages long, where he takes up some hot button topics, hot button issues, that I think a lot of youth is engaging in. And he doesn't shy away from the hard questions either. In fact, when he comes back on the phone, I want to ask him a question, because he actually starts off his book with one of the hardest questions, I think, in apologetics, the problem of evil. So, and he does it in a couple of pages. So I love the short format. It's great. But he also talks about, why don't believe in God? Is the Bible wrong? Even things like, are there aliens, space aliens out there? Or another common one is there no proof for God? Is Jesus isn't real? And by the way, your brain isn't either. Just all sorts of intriguing questions, and why would God send us to hell? The Bible's full of hate. Maybe you've heard these questions before, and so I love recommending resources like this, because it enables us to be able to explain, defend the faith. Or if you don't have time to do so, you could always pick up Brian's book and just hand it to him. You know, if someone says, I just don't see any evil or evidence for the existence of God, you say, hey, read this book, check it out, get back to me, right? In some ways, we're kind of like, apologists are like pharmacists. We're always handing out good stuff, the proper medicine to different people. And do we have Brian on the line?
Yes, you do.
All right. Thanks be to God. All right. Yeah.
Of the pharmacist. I love that. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I feel like. And it's funny. I tell a couple programs ago, I mentioned that I always have books in my car, because sometimes you're in a grocery shopping, market, parking lot or something like that, and someone will come up and, try to evangelize, and you don't have the time. You could always go in the back of my car and find a book and then just give them a book. Here, read this, So it's almost like, dispensing medicine. But while you're away, I was actually saying what's amazing in this short book is you actually start with, I think, one of the most difficult questions in apologetics is the problem of evil. Why is there so much pain?
Yeah, and that's my that's the first chapter, but I go into it in great depth in the 12th chapter. It was from an atheist who was talking to one of my friends, and my friend was like, I can't answer any of his objections. Can he talk to you? Can he call you? So I live here in Connecticut, and I said, sure, give me a call. So him and I talked for about 2 hours, and we talked about the existence of God. I gave him my proofs, and it made a lot of sense to him. Some of it went over his head, he said. But then he said, you know what my real issue is, Brian? Boom. All those other things weren't his real issue. His real issue was what he could not understand, the problem of pain. Why does God allow people to suffer? Why would God, who's loving, allow innocent children to die, you know, somebody to be murdered? And these are great questions, stuff that even we as believers struggle with and, you know, ask God about. And I said a lot of things to him, but toward the end of the chapter, I said, listen, what if your daughter died? You know, if you had a daughter and she was murdered, wouldn't you be upset? I said, of course I would. I'd be devastated more than anything. But here's the deal. If you're an atheist and your daughter gets murdered, what happens? Nothing. There's no God. There's no afterlife. You just have to suffer and move on. There's no justice. In the Christian lifestyle, we have an afterlife. This girl is going to be resurrected. She's going to be happy forevermore. And when I die, I'm going to see her again. And we believe in a God who's God of justice. So the murderer is not going to get away with it either, because there's justice in the Christian worldview. There's nothing like that, and there's nothing that can be offered in the atheist worldview. And he thought about it for a second. He's like, wow. He's like, yeah, that kind of makes sense to me.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, as an atheist, it's hard to even say that there is evil, because, I mean, the murder of your daughter is really just the dispensing of a very sophisticated, highly devolved or evolved animal that just by chance came into being and no longer is there. So to even feel the sting is kind of like, you know, why would you feel a sting? It's just a bunch of molecules.
Exactly. Just synapses firing in your brain. That's all that we are. I mean, many atheists don't even believe we have free will. So some do. Many don't. But the fact is, he said, you know, but why couldn't God just take away all pain? And so I gave him an example that I had read in a book once called Catholic Realism that I really liked. And it said, imagine if you could take a shot, and you'd take a shot or take a pill, and this pill will allow you to never experience pain again, ever, in your whole life. And the only side effect is that it puts you in a vegetative state, and you have to sit in the corner of your bedroom for the rest of your life and do nothing, because you have zero functionality in your brain or your body, but you don't feel any pain. I said, would you take that? Would you take that in order to not feel pain, but you give up the ability to love, to have relationships, to have a life, to experience joy and happiness and pleasure? See, God, in order to take away all pain, would have to take away our free will and make us robots, in effect. And he doesn't want to do that, because he is a relational God who wants a relationship with us. And while he doesn't promise us perfect happiness on this earth, he does promise us perfect happiness in the world to come.
Yeah, and that's often missing from the equation when apologists talk about the problem of evil, is that for the Christian, this isn't the end of existence. You know, for the atheist it is, but for us, it's only part of our journey. You know, ultimately, justice will be had at the end, like you said, and you'll be rewarded or punished according to what you do. And that often, I think it's great that you brought that up, because I think as Catholic apologists, we often forget to add that part of the equation.
Yeah, we do. And that's the most important part of the equation. I mean, even Jesus came to suffer and die for us. And that's the chapter you mentioned, chapter one. But he came to suffer for us and redeem us through suffering, redeem our suffering. But that wasn't the end. The end was the resurrection. The end was perfection. The end was the ascension into heaven and ruling as king forevermore. And Christ himself said in Scripture that if we follow him, even though we die, we will see eternal life, you know, and be with him forever. So I think that's the hope that we have as Christians. It's not just a fairy tale, like, oh, we're just trying to make ourselves feel good and how to deal with death. If we truly believe that Jesus Christ is Lord and Lord over death, then death is not the beginning. It's not the end. It's just the beginning.
Right. Yeah, very good. Very good. Well, hey, do you mind if I jump here and there from your book and you can kind of give us the lay of the land for the different chapters?
Absolutely, I'd love it.
Okay, well, let's go to chapter 3, because I love the Scripture, so this one's kind of near and dear to my heart. the Bible is wrong.
Oh, yes. I get that one all the time. I always have people come up to me and say, hey, you know, you believe in the Bible? Well, the Bible's wrong, and somebody probably just made that up. And I always say, really? Who? And they said, what? I said, well, who made it up? You said somebody invented it, you know, and they probably put hell in there to scare people. I was like, well, who made it up? What year did it happen? How long did it take them to write it? You know, and when you ask them these kind of critical questions, they don't usually have an answer. And but from that particular chapter, some guy, he was actually a teenager, and I've spoken to some really, really well-informed teenagers. I mean, some of them do so much research. They read so many books that they know more than a lot of adults do. So these are very intense conversations sometimes. But he basically was wondering that archaeologists, he said, could not find any evidence for the census. Therefore, the Bible's wrong. That was his argument. Okay. I said, well, just because we haven't found any evidence yet doesn't mean that it's wrong. I mean, we've thought many things were wrong. I mean, Pontius Pilate, archaeologists said, didn't exist. Herod and Sodom and Gomorrah and Licinius the Tetrarch and many of these things in the Bible, archaeologists said these things don't exist or they're wrong in the dates and times, therefore the Bible's wrong. But the more they uncovered and the more study they did, it actually proved the Bible right over and over again. So I said, by your own logic, you should become a Christian because all of these things are proven true again and again by archaeology.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, that's excellent way to treat it. And I love that this is born of actual conversations and dialogues, because it's that's the kind of thing that you run into in the field. So basically, he's arguing from silence that, well, there's no evidence for it, therefore the Bible's wrong. So he kind of called him, you know, told him to lay his cards on the table, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, very good.
It's amazing how many things archaeologists have found that they didn't think existed.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And you're absolutely right. For a while, they were saying Pilate was a figment of the gospel's imagination, and then they discovered the Pilate stone and other things. But, you know, Brian, what amazes me is that they automatically assume that the Bible isn't a historical source, you know, these researchers who do this.
Well, it's true, and I think this goes back to our conversation earlier when you say that your friends just left the church. You know, they played sports and they had a question and they just left. I don't think they want to stay, and I think it's easy for them to leave because it's easier.
Yeah, very good. Talking with Brian Mercer on his book, Why Do You Believe in God? Stay tuned, everybody.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, catholicrc.org.
buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber.
Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow, that's 80%. RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Master Apologist Brian Mercer on his book, Why Do You Believe in God? Catholic Conversations with Skeptics and Nonbelievers. And Brian is just knocking them out of the park. This is great stuff, folks. Here's a common one that I hear a lot, especially from youth, is why would God send us to hell?
Yeah, that's a very good question, to which I always respond, he doesn't.
Yeah, right.
We send ourselves to hell. It's a free will choice, in that, and that's literally the reality of it. And I give the example of a teacher, because I almost flunked out of high school. I told you I had a lot of issues when I was in high school, and I basically flunked out. The only reason I didn't is because my mother made me go for extra help every day and really study so that I could get my grades up and not flunked out. Now, if I didn't do all of that, and if I had just slacked off the whole year, and if I didn't do anything and I didn't take any tests because I didn't feel like it, well, I'm going to receive Fs and I'm going to flunk out. That was my choice, and those were a series of choices that I made. The teachers weren't giving, well, they were giving me an F, but they were only giving me what I had already chosen. They had already given me what I myself chose based on my decisions. And so God gives us heaven or hell based on whether we want to be with him or not, whether we choose him or not. And so hell is a reality. God's not going to grab you by the shirt collar and shake you and throw you into heaven and say you have to go there. I mean, Christopher Hitchens, one of the most angriest atheists in the world, said, even if God is real, he said on his deathbed, I don't want to go to heaven with him. So God's not going to take little Chris and force him against his will to go to hell. He's going to respect his free will, and in fact, it may even be a greater hell for him to be in heaven against his will when he doesn't want to be with God than to be in hell in general. So God respects our free will, and he's not going to force us to do anything that we don't want to.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, that's the great question, great answer. And that is something that you hear a lot with, especially like youth, things like that. It's somehow God's being unfair. You know, how could he send us?
Well, it's true, because I think over the last 50 years, I think we've lost our identity as a church, and we've lost, in a large way, I think a lot of religious have lost their identity as religious. And I think God was presented a lot of times as an angry God, as a God who just beats his fist, and you know, a misunderstanding of the Old Testament God. It just shows that God's always angry. And that's kind of how I grew up with him, thinking that if you do something good, you don't get a reward for it. It's what you're supposed to do. But if you mess up, you're going to hear about it, and there's going to be consequences. And it took me years to undo the misconceptions of God that I had in my mind, and he gave me some deep inner healings, even father wound healings inside, to help me know that he's actually a great loving daddy.
Wow. Yeah, that's beautiful. Awesome. How about this one? Religion has faith, science has facts. Or you could put it another way and say, I believe in science, not religion.
Correct. I get that one a lot. And in fact, I was talking to somebody recently who said, I said, you're an atheist. Okay, fine. But why are you an atheist? Why do you think it's more reasonable that God does not exist? He said, well, because of the Big Bang. He said, the Big Bang is proven by science, is proven by facts, and God is not. And I said, see, you're making the two separate. You're as if they're not on the same playing field. See, you don't realize that the majority of scientists over the last 2,000 years have been Christian, and they've believed in God. So you're saying it's only science or religion, when in fact, for the majority of history, over the last 2,000 years, it's been people who believe in God and science. And they're the ones who have progressed science all down through the ages so that we could have it today. And in fact, I told him, the founder of the Big Bang that you believe in was a Catholic priest. Father George Lemaître in 1929, he was the first one to outline the theory of the Big Bang, and he was the first one to say that it exists. And Einstein called him a genius, and I said, how could he believe in God and the Big Bang? See, religion has facts too. They're just different. Science religion answers the question, who made us? Science is the question, how? So I don't believe that they are opposites. I just believe that they work together.
Yeah, that's a really great way of putting it, too, that they're both fact-based, but different kinds of facts. Yeah, that's excellent. I got one of the beautiful things about being a host is I get to rip off all the great stuff my guests say. So I got to remember that. That's good. Okay, Brian, yeah, this one, it's been a hot topic for a while. I'm sure it's going to continue, is the Catholic Church and the sexual abuse scandal.
That is a big one. In that particular chapter, and I get it every day on my YouTube, 100 times a day, the biggest objection is, well, look at the Catholic Church. They commit sexual abuse. If it was really from God, it wouldn't do that, and over and over and over again. But this particular chapter, someone asked me, hey, are you Catholic? And I said, yeah. And they're like, oh, so you're okay with all the sexual abuse in your church? And I said, well, of course not. And he said, well, it's rampant. It's happening all the time. Your priests are doing things to little kids, and it goes all the way up to the Pope. And I say, well, can you prove that? I said, to make such a grand assertion, you need to actually prove that and back it up with evidence. And nobody can, because it's all an emotional argument, understandably, that church is guilty for a lot of those crimes. And I always admit that at the beginning, that, yeah, some priests in the church did do bad things that were evil and reprehensible. But the Catholic Church at large is not responsible for that, in the sense that it's not a grand conspiracy theory planned by the Pope and coming all the way down. Right. I said that you just can't prove that, and not to mention that it's just silly. But I said, here's the deal. Only about 1.4% of Catholic priests have ever sexually abused someone. 1.4, meaning that is the minority by far. So when people say the Catholic Church does this, the Catholic Church sexual abuses, no, the Catholic Church does not. But some evil priests in the church, a very small fraction minority of them, do. And in fact, probably about 90 to 95% of all the cases that you hear in the news today, I say, happened 30 to 50 years ago. I mean, most of the priests are either fired or dead or doing penance for life or in jail. I mean, it's not an issue anymore. Since 2001, the church actually has reformed its seminaries and a lot of its laws and practices, and it's trying to make sure that that stuff never happens again. And I don't think people realize that. And I gave this statistic to the kid. I said 85%, just to put it into perspective, I said 85% of all sexual abuse happens in the family. That's a fact. About 14-15% happens in public schools and in other settings like that. And then less than 1% of all sexual abuse happens in religious institutions. And of course, it's bad. And, you don't want to justify even a few of them, because we don't want any. But in putting it in perspective, so many people hate the Catholic Church because of sexual abuse. But if they really hated sexual abuse, why aren't they railing against the public schools, just for example, which have a rate that's 100 times higher? And if we really want to extinguish sexual abuse wherever it happens, we would be doing that and not just taking out our anti-Catholic bias on the church.
Yeah, very good, very good. Well, I think we probably have time for maybe one more. We're talking, by the way, with Brian Mercer about his book, Why Do You Believe in God? And you could get that, I imagine, at Amazon. One last question. How about the Bible is full of hate?
Oh, yes, it is. No, it's not. A lot of people think the Bible's full of hate because, well, I get this all the time. God is, he kills people. He's homophobic. He's this. He's that. And really, the reality is people read the stuff on the internet, but they've never read the Bible themselves. Or they read it like it's the Hunger Games. They read it like it's just fiction, one genre. But we don't realize that there are many genres in the Bible. There's poetry, there's wisdom literature, there's apocalyptic literature, there's history, there's biography, there's many different genres in the Bible, and we need to understand the way the authors are writing it if we're even going to understand the Bible at all. People even say there's rape and sexual abuse that's endorsed by God, but none of that is actually true when you read and understand the Bible. And for me, when I read through the Old Testament, and I really love the Old Testament because, yeah, there's a lot of violence and there's a lot of bad things that happen, but God doesn't endorse most of these things.
Right.
And you actually see a beautiful picture of God the Father trying to shepherd his people all throughout the Old Testament, who say, I love you, God. I'm going to be faithful to you. And then, nope, we're all going to turn against you and do the most abominable things imaginable. And one of my favorite passages is, I believe it's in the Isaiah 50-something, but he says, you guys have done the worst things. It would be like having an orgy on the altar in the Catholic Church. I mean, the most abominable things. But God says, even now, if you come back to me, I will forgive you, I will wash away your sins, and you will be my children again. God's always trying to bring them back. But as Scott Hahn once said, if you discipline your child, okay, great. But what if you have a whole neighborhood of kids who needs to be disciplined? Now what happens if you have a whole country of people who need to be disciplined? How do you get through to them? So sometimes God had to use extreme measures to get through to these people and bring them back so they didn't lose their eternal souls.
Yeah, very good, very good. Well, Brian, how can people get a hold of all your book and all the other great stuff that you do?
Well, they can go to my website, which is CatholicBrian.org, and that's Brian with a Y, CatholicBrian.org. It's also my hashtag, where you can find me on social media, YouTube, and my book can be found on Amazon, Why Do You Believe in God?
Very good. Well, hey, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is a lot of fun.
Gary, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, the pleasure is all ours. And ladies and gentlemen, I recommend picking up this book because, like I said, it's a great read. It's simple, yet it's very well written, well researched, and I think very accessible to youth and for people maybe just getting into apologetics. So that is Catholic Brian. Check out his website, and lots of great stuff. I'm sure we'll have a link somewhere on our page. Coming up tomorrow, William Albrecht comes into the dojo. We're going to talk about denying hell, whether eternal punishment or is there annihilation. That's going to be one heck of a show. I noticed I censored myself on that one. Also, after, coming up Thursday, Stephen Piskrowski on Once Saved, Always Saved. It's always great to have him on the show as well. Thank you so much for listening to the program. We appreciate it. And by the way, please share us on social media. Tell your friends about it. Like us. And also, if you can, please remember us when you're giving a charitable contribution. We appreciate it. Coming up next, the dynamic duo, Catholic Talk Radio, the Terry and Jesse Show. Time for me to shut down the Midwest Command Center and turn off the lights here at the dojo. I hope everybody has an awesome day. And God willing, we'll talk again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.